So we'll go with that. Okay, so now we're going to have an educational session on the staff's research about where you are today on gross versus net. Is that right? Okay, Scott.
All right.
Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Russ. The staff are not asking the board to reach any technical decisions on gross versus net reporting today. Therefore, what I would like to focus on for a few minutes and that we think is important to the board's understanding of where we are in this research project and what might be brought forward at future meetings is the interaction between the various pieces of this memo. With that in mind, it's important to understand that while there are two topics in the paper, principal agent considerations and estimating revenue as a principal, there are discrete issues within, in particular, the principal agent topic that I want to ensure are understood as to how and where they intersect. As outlined in the memo, the issue of principal versus agent is a hot topic under existing guidance. The staff have discussed this area with numerous stakeholders, many of them multiple times. And the background section of the memo summarizes key drivers of why this is a current practice issue. To what is in the memo, I'd like to add some emphasis to a couple of the points that were outlined. Coming to the principal versus agent conclusion fundamentally requires that an entity first appropriately identify the unit or units of account at which to perform the evaluation, including properly identifying the underlying goods or services, and then coming to a reasonable application of judgmental guidance that is based on a number of indicators. It is clear from the staff's outreach that there are significant complexities, particularly in some types of arrangements, with respect to both of these aspects. With respect to determining the proper unit of accounting, it is often a matter of significant judgment whether an entity is providing a single, combined bundle of goods or services that should be the focus of the principal agent evaluation, or instead whether there are multiple units of account to be evaluated, in which case the entity may be the principal for some and an agent for others. Even identifying a single good or service can be challenging. Everyone's favorite airline ticket example that exists in current GAAP and in the new revenue standard exemplifies this complexity. People still struggle to determine in many cases whether what should be evaluated as the good or service to which the entity is principal or agent is an underlying good or service, such as the flight in the airline example, or another asset such as a right, for example, a right to a flight that the entity has obtained. Now, once the entity identifies the proper unit or units of account, there is significant judgment in reaching the principal versus agent conclusion, and some diversity about how to reach that conclusion. Just as a few examples of where judgment is necessary and interpretations differ include questions about whether indicators are black and white, that is, met or not met, or can they be inconclusive or partially met? How much stronger are the stronger indicators than the weaker indicators? That is, can or how many weaker indicators can overcome the stronger indicators? Are many of the weaker indicators really just subsets of the stronger indicators? When evaluating the indicators, are you looking only at the contractual risks or potential rewards, or should you be considering the practical risk or upside the entity is taking on when evaluating what that indicator tells you about the entity's role in the arrangement? For example, an entity may be the party that determines or signs off to the price of a good or service with the customer, but does that constitute a gross reporting indicator if that price is, for all practical purposes, constrained by, for example, an automated process or other factors? As noted, these are just a sampling of the interpretive questions of which the staff are aware with respect to existing principal agent guidance and have heard during our outreach. Now, separate from existing issues, paragraph 13 in the staff memo highlights what the staff have heard is an interpretive issue specific to the new principal agent guidance in Topic 606. For many stakeholders, at least in the U.S., there are questions about the interaction between the control principle in paragraph 606, 10, 55, 37, and the agency indicators in 55, 39. The substantive questions about this interaction, along with the fact that the agency indicators are more or less the same as those in existing guidance, mean that when the staff have asked the question, stakeholders do not think the new guidance reduces the judgment or complexity from that that exists in current practice. Now, specifically with respect to Topic 606 on its own, stakeholders' questions about the interaction between the control principle and the indicators mean that, for at least some stakeholders with whom the staff have engaged, they don't know what is determinative to their principal agent evaluation. Is control evaluated in the same manner as control is evaluated elsewhere in Topic 606, like in Step 5 of the model? Or is control, in this one part of the guidance, evaluated through the principal agent indicators? If control is supposed to be evaluated by the 59-39 indicators, how do those risks and rewards indicators link to control? If control is evaluated based on how control is evaluated in step 5 of the model, does that govern and the indicators don't matter if the control evaluation is clear? Can the indicators override a control assessment? These are some of the questions that have been raised about the interaction between the two during the staff's outreach over the last few months. Some of these were also mentioned and discussed way back to the first TRG meeting in July. Stakeholders to take one or more of these views or express that they are simply unsure of what to do point to the examples that seem to them to suggest different answers. Some stakeholders have suggested to the staff that example 45 might suggest control is a separate analysis from the indicators, but that you evaluate the indicators even if you conclude as to control of the good or service before it is transferred to the customer, as occurs in that example. Some other stakeholders have suggested that example 46 suggests control in the principal agent context is only answered by the indicators because it concludes control is obtained based on the indicators and no other discussion of control exists in that example. Still other stakeholders, many of whom have been following the project throughout its life, note that the principal agent guidance has remained relatively static through the two exposure drafts and the final standard, yet seemingly the interaction between the control principal and the indicators has been explained in different ways. For example, the basis for conclusions to the 2011 ED suggested that an entity would assess the indicators only when control was not readily apparent, suggesting a control first, then go to the indicators concept. Well, the basis to the final ASU suggests that the indicators help to assess control, which in and of itself leads some to question how these indicators interact with the control guidance in step 5 if they are just intended to help with the analysis. As outlined in the memo, the staff thinks there may be improvements that could be enacted to address the broader existing practice issues or solely to clarify some aspects of the new principal agent guidance in Topic 606. The staff also notes that depending on the board's actions with respect to the effective date, they may wish to consider whether any improvements the staff develop could be enacted to existing GAAP. Of course, the board could also decide that no standard-setting action is necessary. For example, that the board's intentions with respect to the new principal agent guidance could be clarified through education or some other form of outreach. Regardless of whether the board would want to undertake standard-setting action, at this point, the staff are not yet ready to recommend a package of improvements for a board vote. With respect to the second topic in this memo, estimating gross revenue as a principal, we'll more or less rest on what is communicated in the memo in the interest of time. However, in terms of interrelation, we think it's important to highlight that while related to gross versus net revenue reporting, this topic is much more about determining a principal's transaction price rather than being directly linked to the principal agent considerations guidance. The board could decide to act on this topic even if it takes no action on the existing or the new principal agent guidance. But for clarity, we are not asking for a vote even on this topic alone at this meeting. So with that as an update of what the staff have been undertaking over the last number of months and the status of where we are at, I'll just open it up for any questions you have about where we're at, the issues as I've communicated them, path forward, et cetera.
Thanks, Scott. Daryl? So, Scott, as I was hearing you go through sort of your verbal recitation there of where you were, a lot of the questions that came up in terms of, you know, well, if this was intended, was this intended, et cetera, that combined with reading the memo makes me wonder, and maybe it's possible to kind of summarize this, but would you say at this point is the staff leaning towards saying that it's not really possible to clarify 606 to just better articulate what was intended, or rather are you saying that we basically have to modify it at this point to get some clarity, and particularly when you're looking at 605 in conjunction with it to accomplish both objectives in the same manner, is this going to, in your opinion, necessitate sort of a modification of what we've previously decided or not?
Well, I think you can't divorce, that's why what I was trying to clarify in the TEP is sort of how these, what you might view as a clarification that could exist in Topic 606 to the broader issue that kind of relates to both 605 and 606, how they relate. At present, the staff have been working through and have proposed certain things. We've done one round of outreach with participants last fall. We are not sure yet whether we can substantively resolve the level of judgment and complexity that exists under current GAAP. That's why we leave open that there is the possibility that we might conclude that, you know, the indicator type approach, leaving that level of judgment, there may not be a better wheel to create. That may be something close to there, might be just, you know, practice deals with it. There are some, you know, people have to sometimes go get preclearances with the SEC. Sometimes they have to talk to their national office. But the world hasn't stopped because of it. And maybe we can't come up with anything that is substantially better. However, putting that to the side, we are hearing that specific issue with relation to 606 that we do think could be a clarification. It's not necessarily some sort of fundamental shift in the guidance, particularly since many people, at least in the U.S., are viewing it as not that different from today. So, for example, the type of clarification that could occur just to 606 would be along the lines of what I discussed to open that section, which is we have to clarify how the indicators relate to control. I mean, I had a major, you know, one of the preparer groups that we've talked to, I mean, this is an industry with hundreds of billions of revenue, and their way of putting it was they weren't exactly sure what they were shooting at. Is it control? We might get a different answer if we're thinking about step five control than we do if we're evaluating ourselves against the indicators, which pretty much look like the ones we have today. And resolving that clarification difficulty is something we may want to undertake, even if we don't think we can fundamentally take what is right now the most judgmental aspect, I think, in revenue recognition and make it substantially less judgmental.
Okay. I guess where I was kind of going with the question was, you know, my original thought would be, all right, let's deal with 606. That's the immediate issue. Let's try to figure out what's the right answer there. And then if a solution that we come up with there just happens to sort of fix existing 605 as well, then okay, great. Versus, okay, I need to be thinking about both of these at the same time, and I'm really trying to solve a related but two separate issues with one solution.
I think that's how we're thinking about it. If that didn't come through, my fault. But that would be the focus, is we want to think about the long term rather than the short term. The only reason we leave open the possibility is that at least a couple of the avenues or a couple of the improvements that we talk about in this paper could be backfilled into 605 quite easily within the existing framework. And if we were to defer the effective date for 606 by any sort of substantial period, meaning that 605.45 would stay in place all the way to, you know, could be even 2019 or whatever, given that it's a hot pressing issue that people have asked us to think about, we might want to consider whether we need to act a bit faster. But that's not a given. That's just something we're trying to make sure we keep in our minds.
Jim?
So, the update was very helpful. On the first sort of fundamental issue, I'm cautiously optimistic is probably the wrong word, because I'm not probably in the optimist. Cautious about whether we could make sort of significant improvement in this area on the practice issues today. It's not I'm sure that we can't. I'm just skeptical about whether we're going to be able to significantly remove the judgment and the incentives that people have to try and get to gross accounting for arrangements that run the entire spectrum of very clearly at one end to, you know, clear agent, clear principal to clear agent, and every iteration in between, and somewhere there's a line and we have factors. Not that we can't make marginal improvement, but to significantly eliminate those issues, I'm skeptical, at least given what I've read here. And I don't think it's for lack of research and lack of trying. I think it's for lack of solutions from the people who tell you there are these issues, and you ask what is the solution, and you get sort of blank stares as to how to improve the model, which one leads me to question whether this would be a good issue for the EITF and the people that are on the front lines of the transactions, if this is about making fundamental improvements both to 606 and what we have in practice today, because those issues, of course, are not unique, and I don't view this so much to be about the new revenue standard as existing practice. I do think some of your suggestions about the clarity with which we mean to link the indicators to control or to not to control we ought to think about, even in the absence of trying to fundamentally improve the model. On the second issue about estimating your price in the absence of being able to understand the full amount of consideration to the ultimate customer, I'd like to answer that question. On the one hand, I'd like to say I'm indifferent as how do we get the answer that you don't recognize revenue that you don't know about. Sort of seems smart to me to say if you don't even know what the other side of the transaction was, you probably shouldn't try and start guessing. I don't know how you do that and how you audit that. And so there's three or four ways you guys got there. I preferred one, but sort of indifferent as long as we were clear you don't need to do it.
Tom?
Like Jim, I don't think this is an issue primarily with the existing standard. It's an issue that's been in the United States with existing guidance and maybe exacerbated a little bit with future guidance, given the inherent potential conflict between whether the indicators are an indication of control from a risk and rewards perspective or whether they're, in addition, if you can't figure out control, whether you need to go further to be able to decide how you think about those things. And I think that will likely need to be resolved as we move forward. Like Jim, too, in terms of the second issue, I want it to be resolved that if you don't know the amount, it's not revenue. It's the amount you know. But I am also cognizant, and I'm a little worried in reading the memo, that some of where you're steering us, to be frank, is to be able to get a solution that works for both Topic 606 in the future and Topic 605 now. And I think that answer steers us more to a risk and reward sort of view. The variability of profit or loss for me is an objective, is a risk and rewards view, not a control view. And I'm concerned that to try to get an answer that works for both existing guidance and future guidance, that we may be going down a path that creates greater inconsistencies in the Topic 606 model from my perspective. So I view the control view as the leading point of view in the start. I understand this is a different decision and it's not step five, but that control would be a far better and more consistent way to be dealing with things. I could see the indicators as potentially being, if you can't decide on control because it's difficult, then think about the indicators, because in other parts of the standards, we do talk about control. And we mentioned one of the ways of thinking about control is risk and rewards. And so in some respects, if we were to concentrate on control being the governing principle, I ask questions when I read this memo as to whether or not we couldn't just rely on the other guidance that we have for control in the memo and maybe amplify the risk and rewards a part of it a little bit. Okay. But right now, I feel like we're going down a path that's much more risk and rewards based and not necessarily consistent with Topic 606. So I'd hope that we do that. In addition, like Jim, I want an answer, as I said, that if you don't know the amount, it's not going to be revenue. But you're recommending D, where I think A is another alternative to get there that's more consistent potentially with the control model. And I understand that there might be some differences compared to U.S. GAAP on the intermediary. I don't know that I'm all that troubled about that. And it may actually be that we capture the economics better there, so I don't see that as a resisting point. So, like Daryl, I would like you to be concentrating on guidance that fixes the 606 exclusively, in my view, and then when we're done with that, ask what we should do about that relative to 605. And one thing we could do instead of updating 605 is replace 605 with this 606 guidance, but let it go forward and just accelerate it rather than necessarily dominate on risk rewards for both.
To be clear, I said I preferred one view under the last. It was also A.
I think, as we tried to highlight, obviously we'll bring that back for a vote, so I won't spend too much time on that. I was concerned about the fact that we don't exactly know what we're going to do yet to potentially fix principal agent, and we didn't want to more or less designate one fact pattern was going to come out a certain way under that analysis without knowing what that was going to be. I can understand that notion. I think when we looked at view D, which was in there, it just doesn't feel like variable consideration because it's never going to settle. That seemed to us the cleanest way to get from A to B. But that being said, to your point, Tom, it was not the intention of the memo to necessarily show bias. It was just that one needed a little bit more explanation. You hit on it perfectly that in our view, at least the FASB staff view, is that control isn't necessarily it's a step five notion. This is about determining the nature of your promise. So when you talk to people out in the field about how they think about what really means the nature of your promise is to provide a good or service versus to arrange, which today under today's guidance is your promise to sell. Do you sell the goods and services, or are you receiving a fee for arranging for the goods and services? The wording is slightly different. It almost always seems to hinge on this variability in profit or loss. It's the way you determine which role you are in. And oftentimes the indicators work as sort of a complementary notion under that, even though that isn't a stated principle. And the only reason we offer that as a potential option is, one, because we don't think we have to be wedded to control because it's really just one paragraph in the IG. The indicators are still there. And because we think that it might be a good way still, just as it's, you know, the core today, it might be still be a good core tomorrow for determining a step two question about what the nature of your promise is. Our point in if we bring forward either of those approaches or anything of that nature would be, what do we think the best way is to determine the nature of the promise? It is not because we are trying to link to old guidance. Whether it came through in the memo or not, that was our intent. It's a backfill to get to 605.45. Our focus is on the future. And, you know, or maybe it's control, but our intent would be to make sure that we pick the best one that's going to solve the problem at hand.
To be clear, I think control is a better concept behind this. I agree with your views in this memo that if you have the goods and service beforehand, you've got control. Before you get the customer, or if you get the customer before that, and you have to get the good or service afterwards, is a good way to think about those people as having to be principals. I believe concentrating just on the indicators allows the ability to have people be thought to be principals absent meeting those two other things I just discussed. And it's too slippery of a slope, and I think we're getting more pressure in the system around it because they want gross presentation than that. And so I also believe, even though it's not a step five issue, control is the better way to help resolve some of these circumstances, or at least I'd like to make sure it's explored very seriously. And I'm not sure I'm seeing that.
Over to the ISB. Hans?
So please turn to agenda paper 7E. The background of issue 1 as explained by the FASB staff indicates that in many respects the implementation questions highlighted in TRG discussions already existed before IFRS 15 was issued, and thus they're not caused by IFRS 15. The principal versus agent guidance included in IFRS 15 built on the previous requirements in IAS 18 and improved upon those requirements by having a clearer principal over the indicators. For this reason, the ISB could decide that no standard setting is needed at this time. However, the discussion at the TRG meetings has highlighted the difficulties stakeholders are having in linking the various aspects of the guidance. In the paper, we've laid out the analysis of the requirements in the standard with respect to the issues raised under the staff analysis section. We think that a very important consideration which stakeholders should look at in applying the principal versus agent guidance is the identification of the entity's promise that we've explained in paragraphs 27 to 30. That is, what is the good or service which the entity is controlling before transferring to the customer? And we think example 57 in the illustrative examples helps to a certain extent in this regard. And what we also think is that the notion of control and the indicators are intertwined with this aspect about what is the nature of the promise. On balance, we think that, or we recommend that we do more work in understanding what minor amendments could be made to the standard to clarify the existing thought process which is already embedded in the standard, or consider adding one or two illustrative examples that might be helpful in addressing the issues, or both. On issue two, we think the situations in which the principal is unaware of the gross consideration collected by the agent from the end customer is a narrow population of contracts, and hence we recommend no further work at this time. And as the FASB staff has explained, this is not an issue about the principal versus agent guidance, and the general guidance in the standard would assist an entity in identifying or in determining what is the transaction price. So over to you for comments.
Thank you. Although the problem was not caused by IFRS 15, but it is true that interaction between B35 and B37 indicators are not very much clear. So therefore, the question is, when we made IFRS 15, I think we inherited a lot of indicators from IS 18 directly. So the question is whether or not the board has intention to change the current practice substantially or not. That is not very much clear. So therefore, I think future work is necessary anyway. However, I don't think we should make a drastic change like it proposed in the paper, paragraph 37B. So it changed the. It will depart from the control idea. I don't think we should go that far, because if we did it, it may solve some problem of gross net issue. However, it may jeopardize the basic idea of revenue, fundamental idea of revenue in the IFRS 15. So we shouldn't go that far.
First, I agree to the question two, not to do anything on this issue two. On the issue one, just a question to the staff. What is the time frame for you of doing this, some further work and getting back to the board eventually and trying to package that results in the single exposure draft that we still want to issue sometimes in June? You think it's possible to?
Well, that's what we would like to do, Philippe, yeah. That's what we would like to work towards. And so that's why we're thinking in terms of quite limited amendments, and why we're asking you, you know, to give us permission to continue to explore that to see what we could do.
You come back to the board in, say, May?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
So I guess the staff can go ahead. Do its explorations.
Okay, I think we're done here.
We hold on. We have one more question here. You okay? All right. So I think we're done. I noticed Jan's in the background. I'm surprised about his retirement choice. But Jan, it's good to see you. Anyway,
he is reclaiming his seat because he had promised to only leave when revenue recognition was finished.
There you go. That's right. Okay, great.
Reopening, he was reclaiming his seat.
Okay, well, I think that concludes our joint meeting. I will see you, Tom and I will see you next week in London.